the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Week, episode 69, recorded Friday, December 14th, 2012. 4K Viewmaster.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
AV Week.
Online.
This is AV Week.
It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. I'm your host. Thank you so very much for joining us. With us this week is Mr. Kevin Iselli from Crestron Electronics. He is the Senior Curriculum Developer. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. You made my last name sound spooky.
Iselli.
Yeah.
Almost sound mafia-ish, but you're from Detroit, so.
Originally, yes.
Okay, so it makes it better that you're from Chicago now? I don't think so. They had gangsters in Chicago.
You know, Detroit, where the weak are killed and eaten.
All right. You're going to scare away our new guest.
Hardly.
Okay, well, there you go. Bill is from Appletel. Bill, mm-hmm. I didn't ask you how to pronounce your last name. How do you pronounce your last
Stitler.
Name? Stitler, just like it's spelled. He is from Appletel. Yep. He is the associate editor. Welcome, sir.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Good to have you. This week we're going to talk about whether or not glasses-free 3D is doomed, and anything about 3D being doomed, I am a big fan of. So, what AV guys do for Christmas lights, and whether or not Pico projectors are finally going to take off. My guess is hopeful. Maybe they tie it to smartphones. That would be cool. But first, our buddies over at Infocom. This is not really a discussion point, guys. It's just, hey, they have a new website. So Infocom has a new website. If you've never been there, go to infocom.org. Now it's new, it's bright, there's a lot of new things to do, and the link that we're going to put on the show page, actually it's a link to the instructions. I don't know that I've ever had a website give me instructions on how to navigate, but hey, I'm glad that they did.
I was really excited about this at first because I thought it was Infocom, the old games company.
Wow.
So I thought that, you know, I hoped that I was going to like get like just a cursor interface to like find out more about this. I would have to type like go north and things like that. But
okay, for a bunch of brownie points, Bill, what's a game that Infocom made?
Oh, I can make a list.
Really?
Deadline, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy,
Or
the Goddesses of Phobos, Zork, Planetfall. I can go on. I can do this all day if you want to.
So long, and thanks for all the fish. All right. Mm-hmm. That's my Hitchhiker's
Guide. Seems like if you have directions for a website, you went wrong somewhere.
Yeah, especially if it's a technology website, you need to explain to people how to use it.
It's a membership organization website. I mean, it just says, you know, here's the catalog, here's the resources, here's the member benefits area.
If only there was some way people could search on a website to find this information. I'm just putting that out there. I'm not a technology guy. I'm a user.
There's a search button. That's right.
All right. Well,
maybe they could, you know, partner with Google.
I'm looking at the search button right now, and it says disabled for re-indexing.
Well, that's a bad sign. But it's brand new. They just rolled this out yesterday.
It would be great if it had like the little animated GIF of the construction guy digging.
Oh my! Every GeoCities site ever made had that GIF. And kids, if you don't know what GeoCities is, go Google it. It was an experience in and of itself. So
tell them also what a GIF is.
I don't know what is I used to know this. What is
graphics GIF? Interchange format?
Thank you.
Yes,
I'm a horrible person. I don't know that.
I miss GeoCities. GeoCities was kind of like the cave paintings of the internet, I think.
Well, and the nice thing about the fact, speaking of cave paintings, is the fact that you've got the, the Internet Archive, guys.
Yeah.
Where you can, it's a time machine. You can type in any URL, I believe, including the GeoCities ones. And they will have a snapshot of it. Now, some of the artwork may have gone away because they didn't capture that, but at least, you know, the text is there. When I was in radio, we would go back and look at various radio stations from 2 and 3 and 4 or 5 years past, and it was it's a neat thing. So
there's actually, not to keep us off track here, but before GeoCities went down, somebody captured it, and there's like a torrent that's like a terabyte in size you can download, and it's got this archive of GeoCities. And there's actually somebody has a blog where they're going through and like posting sections of.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
See, I wasn't cool enough to have a GeoCities. I had an Angel Fire page.
That's still around.
Yeah. Is it still around?
Oh, yes, it is actually. I was just I was actually doing some research on a guy who used to post just like he had just like thousands and thousands of pages that were all the same, and I was trying to find them, and they're still up there. Angel Fire still lives.
I wonder if my page is still up there from like 12 years ago.
Oh, let's find out.
I couldn't tell you what the name of it is. That's the thing is, yeah, it was tied to a Hotmail account, and yeah, really bad.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about really expensive, really high-end video systems, specifically Kaleidoscape. Kaleidoscape is a very fancy-smancy, very high-end, but very cool and very well done video delivery system. And what they've got is they have now they have a new download digital store where you can get Blu-ray quality from the store. And what's unique about this is the fact that they've gone from at least from what I can tell, and this is on Technology Tell's website, is they've got a way to where you can. This is a legal way to do this. And in the past 2 and 3 and 4 years, there have been rippers, DVD rippers and Blu-ray rippers who have gone to court and they have lost, unfortunately, time and again, the ability to take the content that you legally purchased and put it on a device that you legally purchased and all you're doing is serving it up. But the courts still say no. So this is kind of Kaleidoscape's way to say, okay, you know what, instead of buying Star Wars for the fourth or fifth time, why don't you download it? And so, Bill, is that kind of what I'm getting here? Is that this is Kaleidoscape's way of saying, okay, we cry uncle. This is another way to do this that still makes the movie companies happy?
I was looking into this, and like you said, first of all, let's cover, like you said, this is like a really high-end. This is like if you're a home theater junkie. This is not something that you just, you know, you go to the search engine to find a dealer to install this. They also have options for marine dealers. The reason why this came up on the Technology Tell website is they've just introduced a new service. They had originally, it looks like, Kaleidoscape. I have to make sure I get the company name right. Had a service where you would load the DVDs that you owned, the DVDs and Blu-rays, into a jukebox, essentially, a small thing. And then you could stream those throughout their house. And now they're introducing a store where you can buy movies in addition to the movies that you already owned. So say if you want to see a new release, and then you can stream this to this high-end theater. What's interesting is, and I was trying to pour through their website, is it doesn't look like they're selling HD content yet. And it looks like, and I may be wrong about that. Okay, they're definitely just selling the SD content now. And the site is in beta, so not everybody can get into it. Yeah. But it looks like you may have to have already bought the Blu-ray in order to stream the Blu-ray wherever you are. So this is, seems like a very complicated system.
Mr. Iselli?
Yes.
You have some experience with Kaleidoscape. Crestron, actually, a couple of years ago, good Lord, this has probably been 3 or 4 years ago now, they had a system where they interfaced with Kaleidoscape and I think it was a part of the DNAV tools where you could scroll through like the artwork on the control panel.
Yeah, it was just basically a module we had that would communicate to the device, pull metadata, and make it sort of an on-screen or on-touch screen, if you will, interface to the unit.
But this is something you guys had that in conjunction with not just the physical media, but also when they were trying to go through these waters of file-based media. And you guys are ubiquitous. You're Switzerland. You know, you don't care how people get the content. You just, you know, you if you've got the metadata data, then yeah, you can serve it up. Do you think that this is a concession by Kaleidoscape by developing this store, saying, you know what, we cry uncle, let's just kind of do it and get it over with, and we're gonna, because you know our customers are asking for this, or is this more them being proactive maybe and saying,
no, I think it's a pretty good maneuver when you look at, you know, what iTunes and some of the other, let's say, call them media stores are doing, and even with what Best Buy is calling the new one. I do apologize, I forgot the name of it. The digital downloads is becoming very prevalent. One of the things that Kaleidoscape had issued with them through the last form of litigation they had is that even if you have content on that server or on their server, because they basically give you the content, mm-hmm. you have to have a changer with the physical media somewhere in the system. Well, the way, like, and with our ADMS unit, we do not give you the ability to rip content to the ADMS. Mm-hmm. So your content has to come from somewhere else. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. So the idea is, you know, we don't have, though we have storage capability on the unit, we don't have a direct connectivity to, let's say, ripping content, which is why we also had paired up with Sony and their ES Blu-ray changer, which sadly, of course, they don't make anymore. This giving you the capability of, you know, 400 Blu-rays in a carousel. Now, I don't know where this leads Kaleidoscape as far as their, because they also have a carousel, they have a changer vault, if you will. I don't know if they're going to continue to do so, or if it's more of, okay, let's just make this a purchasable download and all you're, and you're all set.
Well, do you think there are some people who, I mean, I use my dad a lot on this show because he's a very nice gentleman, but he's not very technology inclined. Mm-hmm. But there are a group, there's a group of the population who physically want something in their hands. And so do you think that Kaleidoscape maybe might keep that carousel in line for those people?
Potentially. I mean, there's still people who like VCRs. So, you're going to have some what?
I see. What?
But those are
no,
all
I still problems. I still
go ahead.
I still have a VCR. I use it too.
No.
I have some, like, oh yeah. I have some old TV specials and some old episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000 that I'll watch that are not out on DVD. And it's a really strange experience going from HD back to a VCR.
Bill, I'm going to buy you a DVD recorder for Christmas.
So convert that stuff.
I have all of this. You know, I have all of the stuff that I can do with that. But it's just, it's a different experience. It is a nostalgic experience. Let's put it that way.
All right. So is.
But like, yeah, but like you said, it's a thing of I have this in my hand, and I know that, you know, a lot of stuff is just on the internet, legally, illegally, and quasi-legally, but just knowing that it's, no, you know, I have a perfect example for you. I have the Star Wars trilogy on VHS when that first came out.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
It is the non-special version. Mm-hmm. It is the version that was released, that was re-released in theaters. They cleaned up the effects and all this stuff. And it doesn't look great. It certainly doesn't look like the blue, but it is that version that I remember watching.
No,
and you can't get.
Here's the thing. It's the one where Han shot first. It's the one without the CG version of Jabba the Hutt in episode four. You know, it's the good one.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's a full screen. It is a full screen edition, not widescreen, because we didn't have widescreen back then. And I will just pop it in every once in a while just watch the movie as I remember it being.
Yeah, see, I wish I could get that on DVD.
Oh,
or
I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
All right.
Well, you've heard of, I don't want to, I'm sorry, I'm the guy who takes the discussion off course. There is, of course, the despecialized edition, which was a guy who goes by the name of Harmy, I think is his handle. He went through and took a bunch of different Blu-ray DVDs and sources and all these different things and tried to piece together the movies as they originally came out from these editions.
Wow.
Yeah.
I still say my favorite edition is the Family Guy editions.
Well, there is that. I see. I just recently I bought a new DVD or a new Blu-ray player, and I had the SD version on DVD from years ago. I had gifted them to my nephew who is a teenager now, and he's getting into them. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'll buy the Blu-ray. I'll buy the whole set. You know, episodes 1 through 6, and they've got some extra specials. And I'm sitting here watching them with my kids. You know, and it's their first time with episode, you know, 4, A New Hope. It's their first time with Return mm-hmm. of the Jedi. And I'm like, this is just not, you know, I remember walking in being 10 years old, seeing, you know, the guy in the Darth Vader suit going into Return of the Jedi, and this is just not the same movie. I mean, it's not horrible. The story is still there, and the coolness is still there, but it's just, you know, I don't know.
What did the kids think?
They love it. They love it. Actually, I think my son's favorite one is episode 6, and mm-hmm. of course my daughter's is episode 2 because there's, you know, the lovey and they get married. And
now did you show it to them in?
I showed them in sequence. Order yeah, that, in yeah, sequence okay. in 1 through 6. So
okay, yeah. I know that was a big debate with a lot of my geek friends who have kids: is should they show them the original trilogy first or should they show them?
I think here's the thing: the showing it 1 through 6, and this is totally off subject. Showing it 1 through 6 gives them, being exposed to it for the first time, the whole story of Anakin, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool.
Yeah, just as you skip 1, that way you don't have to do the whole charge.
I had to get, you know, 1 is there, and it explains a little bit of the Emperor eventually, so.
You know,
Jar Jar aside, it there is validity to episode 1.
Yeah. I saw episode 1, and it made me so angry, I did not watch the next 2.
Really?
I've seen little bits and pieces as I've been walking through friends' living room, but... It baffles me how many people are got angry about them and then would still go see the next one. That just, I cannot wrap my mind around.
See, 3 is my second favorite one.
Really?
Episode 5 is still my favorite, Empire Strikes Back. But right. Revenge of the Sith is pretty wicked okay. from visually and from the story. And that is when, you know, Darth Vader emerges. And that's mm-hmm. kind of cool, so... All right, let's talk about some more geeky stuff here. From commercial integrator Belden has purchased BBC, PPC, Paul Charlie, for $515 million. If you don't know what PPC does, they make really good HDMI cables, and they better for $515 million. Kevin Belden has been in the cable business for freaking ever. You guys, Grestron has HDMI cables, which you thankfully test and stuff like that and put a little sticker on it. But in the world of vastly developing digital cabling and digital media, is this a smart move on Belden's part to just pick up somebody who's been doing this and apparently been doing it well for a while?
Well, my guess is they got to him before we do, because we did, because we used PPC. Our cables are actually PPC, our HD lock cables are from Perfect Path.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, there you go.
So, is it a good move for Belden? Sure. Cabling's a fantastic business. Nothing like snake oil to get your day going.
Jeez. Hey.
What?
Well, here's my question as an end user. Now, I've heard various debates about whether there is or is not a difference between HDMI cables, because I've heard one school of thought that it either works and you get the data, or it doesn't work, and then I've heard on the other side, no, there's like a difference in like the quality.
Well, Bill, it depends on who you ask. If you talk to somebody who's trying to sell you a cable, it makes a difference.
Did I ever tell you guys, we did this on the EdTech show, which was, it was hilarious when they brought this up. Matt Silverman brought it up. He was at Best Buy, I think, and this is not a slam against Best Buy. There was an HDMI cable that promised antivirus protection.
I've seen that picture.
Yeah.
I saw the picture on the back of the
yeah.
Oh god, I remember, that was great.
That's fantastic.
That is that's one you sell to my 60-year-old dad, okay? That's
yeah. Oh, well, you know, because I get kicked out of many a Best Buy for that very reason of trying to talk to the consumer to open their eyes to what they're really buying. And that usually meets with a lot of stink eye and some, please, sir, would you leave the building?
Mr. Iselli, we have a restraining order.
Yeah, it's almost.
They have your picture by the door?
Sometimes, yeah. It depends on which one I go to. No, it's fascinating. I mean, is infrastructure important to your system? To a point, yes. I think, unfortunately, we fall into the marketing ploys in a lot of places where, you know, cables offer to deliver things that are totally just, you know, irrelevant to what you're trying to do. In fact, I'm reminiscent of the last conversation I had with a salesman, let's just put it that way.
Okay.
A specific box store who was trying to sell somebody on purchasing a cable that was 1.5 meters long, that the sale price on it was $349.
Holy!
And
whoa!
So I sat there thinking, okay, you really don't understand what you're buying. I asked the salesperson, I said, so by purchasing this cable with all of its silver content and all of its gloriousness and cable wrapping, you're going to guarantee me a better 1 and 0. To which, now, Tim, this will be funny to you because you know me. This was met by the salesman saying, sir, I'm not sure you understand how HDMI works.
Oh!
Oh, man.
And, which got the look from my wife saying, you better just leave now.
you didn't whip out your PowerPoint presentation right there?
No, I didn't.
That would be killer.
It would have been funny. Yeah, if only I had a Pico projector. So
nice segue. Yeah,
there's a lot to infrastructure, but one of the things I wish we could kind of settle out on is all of the, you know, the madness of cable. It is a fantastic business. I mean, there's multi-million dollars to be made per day. And you know, Belden making, you know, a absolutely fantastic infrastructure in the telecommunications industry as well as the AV industry. I mean, I've been using Belden cables and specing Belden cables for my whole career. For them to pick up a specialty company that, like Perfect Path, that makes HDMI and some other specialty cables, sure, it kind of fits right in with their product offering.
Well, let me ask you this, and I don't mean to pick on you, but isn't that, I mean, yes, you can buy some of the best switchers, some of the best, you know, processors, some of the best projectors in the world. But if your cabling is crap, and I guess it's all relative, you know, what am I defining as crap? And I don't really know, so don't, I mean, I'm not that into this. But isn't, I mean, if you have a subpar or a poorly performing infrastructure, isn't all your other fancy schmancy gear kind of at its mercy?
I guess, it kind of depends. I mean, it depends on where you go. Now, of course, I'm going to irritate all the audiophiles because they always talk about, you know, skin effect on copper and optical purity and with optical cables. And you can make them argument all day long. At the end of the day, it's still the same thing. It's all subjective. It's all preferential. The cables that I use for the longest period of time before I switched all to digital, I made all my cables, right? Only because it was easier, it was more cost effective. I was getting broadcast quality cables for everything that I did. In fact, even in my classes, I talk about cabling infrastructure and I drop the term of NVP, right? Nominal velocity of propagation. Of course, everybody looks at me like I'm silly. but, you know, this is what now you have to understand. Now we're talking about how effective is the cable in the infrastructure and how well does it deliver signal.
But
go ahead.
I was going to say, but you were making cables and I was doing the same thing in the world of analog.
Yeah.
This is if I'm asking somebody, and believe me, I've looked into it. I worked for a very small community college, right? We don't have any money, you know. I've got buddies that work on the East and West Coast that you know, their budgets for AV is probably three times as what I make in a year. So they can buy, you know, the $300 HDMI cable. So I've looked into making my own HDMI. I've looked into making my own, terminating, you know, HDMI. It's not easy.
No, it's not. Well, it's not easy, and it also doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're now talking about a a cabling infrastructure in HDMI that there's not a lot of room for slop there.
No.
To field terminate HDMI, I always looked at it as, you know, I always looked at it as, why do you hate yourself?
I was going to say, there have been a couple guys in the last couple of years at Infocom that have shown some interesting things. You know, there was one company, and I apologize, I don't remember who it was, but basically you took the HDMI cable, you trimmed everything back, you exposed all 19 cables, you fed them through the connector, and the connector kind of, you had this overlap come through the connector, and you snipped it on top, and then you crimped it down, and that was your field termination. And that was pretty simple.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, Tim. I hear what you're saying, and I understand that, and that's fine, but you also have to remember the properties of the signal, the transmitter, and receiver. They're not made to go long distance, so why are you field terminating?
Because it's cheaper.
Just cheaper.
I'd
rather not have a signal than have, well, anyways.
Yeah, all right.
So what I'm hearing is, whatever HDMI cable I get in an actual store is okay, but I shouldn't trust the little village shopkeeper who comes by with his cart and wants to cut an HDMI cable.
Who wants to give you a custom one, the exact length of your arm, yes.
He wants the little one of wood, yes.
Yes, okay.
But what is it, the whole adage about cameras, the best camera is the one that you have. The best HDMI cable you have, the best HDMI cable is the one that you have.
Well, there's a little bit of it to making sure that you buy good quality cables. Don't get me wrong. I always remember the adage, if you buy cheap, you buy twice. I'm not going to name the website, but there was, you know, hundreds of cables purchased from websites that, you know, when in our hands and we tested, were just failed cables right out of the bag. Right? They wouldn't even pass the signal. So, you know, it is kind of, you know, if you're buying speakers from the back of the van, you're going to get speakers from the back of the van.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you have to go into the, you know, the gold-plated, my favorite is the gold-plated TOS cables, right? The optical cables.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That way you don't have any interference in your light. So, you can go from extreme to extreme.
Let me give you a good example. An audio friend of mine, this guy, he does audio systems, and he was hooking up a surround sound system for a buddy of his, and he needed one HDMI cable. So he goes out to the store, I won't name the store, and he calls me up and he's like, okay, I've got two cables here. I'm like, all right, you know, so well, you know, what's, you know, how long are they, and this other stuff like that. He goes, okay, so what's the difference between the $16 one and the $21 one? I said, $5. He said, no, really, what's the difference between the $16 one and the $21? I said, $5.
Yes.
And he's like, what do you mean? I said, it's $5 worth of difference. I said, quality-wise, probably not a whole lot. I said, if you had one that was $3 and one that was $50, you might have, you know, some quality issues. You might have some connectivity differences between the two. But you're talking about $5. Is that fairly accurate, Kevin? Not
again,
obviously not knowing everything about the companies, but because
to the audiophile, how dare you?
Right. Are these the guys that are using magic markers and highlighters on the edge of their CDs to keep the laser light from leaking out?
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Okay,
because you can't have the light leak out. That would be bad.
Music is escaping.
Well, and when you lose the ones and the zeros, it starts skipping, and it's just bad. Led Zeppelin starts sounding like Justin Bieber. So, all right, let's go over to Gizmodo and talk about one of my favorite things of all times, Pico projectors. And I know you hate them. That's why I'm going to start with Bill. This is a friend. This is from Samsung, who is not a stranger to small mobile devices. Some would say that they are rivaling, if not kicking, Apple's tail on some things. Picos are not new. They've been around for a while. I think I saw my first one at Infocom probably 5 years ago now from Texas Instrument. And it's an interesting concept. We joke about Kevin whipping out his Pico to show a PowerPoint presentation, but that's the whole idea, is the fact that you always have this thing. And there are also rumors that this is a precursor. This is kind of I'm not going to say a red herring, but it's a demo unit that they're throwing out there to see the interest, and then they're just going to throw this in the next Nexus or the next Galaxy or whatever. kind of as an end user-ish, does a portable projector in your pocket make sense? Is it just another thing?
I see these things and I imagine that there's an underground of business people who are having like freestyle rap battles with PowerPoint.
Wow.
That they're meeting and they just like, you know, in the middle of nowhere decide that they need to show off their mad skills. Is this, how often does somebody run into a situation where they need to do an impromptu PowerPoint presentation and they don't have a projector with them? It just boggles my mind.
I can say that, you know, I've been in this business well over 20 years, and other than seeing a Pico projector at a trade show, I've never seen a Pico projector.
Yeah. Yeah, this is so crazy. I mean, this would be like, because I can think of all sorts of crazy uses for this, like doing an impromptu, like, movie projection. Okay, we're going to show a movie right now. But I have never seen... Unless
you ask one for Santa every year.
And he still has been.
Do you? I mean, what would you? I mean, how is this? Okay, maybe if you're like a traveling salesman, or if you're a guy who is, you know, knows he's going to have to do something, do a presentation in a weird area. But is this something that people need? Is there a need for this?
Okay, so here's my nostalgic part, right?
All right.
And I will totally cop to this, right? I loved my ViewMaster when I was a kid.
Yay!
And, which is why I took 3D as well.
No, I hate 3D, but I loved my ViewMaster. And ViewMaster or somebody had this device, and it was ViewMaster on steroids, right?
Right.
It was a projector, for, you know, for lack of a better term, that you put your ViewMaster in, and you could show the ViewMaster on the wall, right? To me, a Pico projector is kind of that little thing where you can show whatever you want, wherever you want it. I mean, for $100,
okay.
I'm spending more than that on a couple of technology things for my kids this Christmas anyway.
Why don't you just get the little flashlight that does the same thing?
Does it have an input, though? I mean, can I show anything?
No. Put the slides in it, man. That's all you
got. So, Tim, if you got this, if this was in your stocking, would you just, like, go, like, as you're in the airport, just start showing people your vacation slides?
Yes! And, like, or Kevin's PowerPoint presentation on HDMI.
How dare you?
You could do little informal seminars.
Hey, you know what? I go to some pretty cool places for vacation. I got some.
Thanks for all coming to the Gate 8 13. Airport at Minneapolis St. Paul. We're going to be discussing today.
Yeah, try the veal and let's get started.
I would do that, but I would show movies. I would like, okay, here's a little, this, like, show little cartoons while people are waiting for the bus and stuff like that. I think that would be really cool.
All right.
Unfortunately, Bill, you're not deterring him.
These are all positives. These are all reasons to get this thing.
I seriously think that you guys. I do a thing called PowerPoint karaoke. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
It's something they did. They started that I first heard about it in South by Southwest. They didn't start it there, but you have people who give a 6-minute PowerPoint presentation. They've never seen the slides before, and the slides are completely insane. Go on the web and look for some of these. They're fantastic. And so they just have to, like, so they get a topic, and they have to go and, like, give the presentation, and they don't know what the slides are going to be.
Oh, nice.
So I think this would be great if people wanted to start doing that, like, impromptu stuff. Just have, like, little PowerPoint.
Well, you know what? We're getting into the winter season. There are going to be delays at airports. That's a perfect thing.
Yeah.
Again, one more reason to have a Pico projector.
All right.
All right, moving on. Kevin, our buddy's up north. Rogers, by the way, is the, I think that's the cable system, the satellite system, and the cellular phone system in Canada. I think it's the only
one. They have satellite in Canada now?
Maybe not. Yeah, they have satellite. They have to have satellite,
sorry,
don't they?
Well, they just got Michael Jackson's Beat It, so. No, I'm just kidding. My neighbor's Canadian. And I don't even hold that against him.
Jeez. All right, we had Brock McInnes on last week from Canada, and he was a good guest, but we for some reason, anytime,
well, Canadian.
Well, he was Canadian, but he still lives there. But for some reason, every time somebody's on from Canada, we just Somebody said at some point makes fun of them for some reason. I don't understand it.
I love Canada.
They're very nice people. They're very
polite. Have you ever seen an angry Canadian?
No.
Exactly.
They only give you one hug.
The angry Canadian only gives you one hug. Wow. So anyhow, so Rogers has come up with this fabulous idea to, hey, let's control our TVs with our smartphones and tablets and such.
Wow, if anybody had invented that technology.
Well, you know, the technological center of the universe is the Great White North. So is this just kind of them saying, yay, me too? Or one of the gripes that, you know, seriousness that the Canadians do say is the fact that they don't get a lot of things. Like, there are certain shows that aren't available on the Canadian version of Netflix that's on the American version. I think our buddy Matt Scott was telling me about some of the disparities in ESPN even. So is this Rogers coming to the table with something that we've had for forever?
Are you saying did they invent something that allowed you to take an iPhone and control a TV?
I say did they invent it. I said have they finally brought the Canadian people something that people down south, meaning us.
The universal remote.
Yes.
Here's my question. Has anyone gotten the universal remote right, period? Because I've got four or five different devices hooked up to my TV, plus the TV itself, and I can't find, you know, a universal remote that... Because the issue is, like I said, I have a VCR, but I also have, like, an older DVD player, and then there's a cable box, and it just... You cannot find anything that has all the codes that plays correctly with everything.
Oh, Bill, so, you are on the right call. you need a Crestron system is what you need.
Oh, Lord.
And yeah, well, hey, you know what? It's you know, whether it's Crestron, all my love to Kevin, but Crestron or AMX or somebody else that does stuff like that is what you're talking about. Yeah, you're not talking about a Harman. You're talking about a another jump up, right?
Yeah, you can't, you know, with all respect to the, you know, our competitors and other manufacturers, the term universal remote is incredibly dodgy at best.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, you've got, you know, some devices that are supported, some are not. What about the ones that are not? What do you do? Well, you know, you call up and say, hey, I'd like you to support this device. They say, no, buy a new device.
Yeah.
And what Tim's basically getting at is folks like Crestron and AMX and others. We basically build a mechanism and a transport that allows you to use whatever device you want.
Okay.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. And of course, Crestron being the coolest, we have more ways of communicating than, oh gosh.
Anybody.
The ancient language, the ancient tongues.
Crestron is the Rosetta Stone of control.
All right, I'll check it out.
We are.
If you start using that, I'm going to charge you.
I'm not going to use that because you came up with it.
It's a good slogan.
I have to say.
Sure, whatever.
I'm going to, just to get off the beaten path again, yes. Roku just updated fairly recently their iPhone app to control, you know, if you have a Roku device in there. And what was interesting was they changed it. It used to, the Roku app used to look like the physical Roku remote. And they just, with the latest version, they just completely got rid of that. And now it's better for, like, gestures. Like, it's like you don't press, because it doesn't have physical buttons. Like, if you're holding a physical old-school remote in your hand, you can find the buttons and know where it is. But to do that with an iPhone, you have to look at it. And what they've done is they've changed it to, like, swipe down to, like, move the cursor down as opposed to pressing the quote-unquote down button. Hmm. And it works a lot better. It's actually, yeah, I thought it was an actually really cool implementation.
Let me ask you a question, Bill, kind of wrapping that back around. Are these apps becoming the smartphone version of the remote control box at your house? In other words, you've got like 15 remotes at your house, one to control the TV, one to control the cable, right. One to control this, that, and the other. Instead of that, you have 15 apps on your phone now.
Well, here's the thing is, for the most part, I can use the universal remote for that came with the TV. But there are some things it doesn't do. It, like, I can turn the DVD player on and hit play, but I can't access the, you know, like the fast forward and the search features and stuff like that. So for that, I have to make sure that I have the DVD, and I can't activate the USB port that's on the DVD player. So
hey,
I have
Tim.
To make sure that, yeah.
Yes.
Tim, this is the part where we go.
Yeah. So I have to make sure I have the DVD player remote around. You know what the thing is about smartphone app remotes? They're using it strictly as a way to sell you a new TV.
You think?
They're not, well, obviously, but I mean, they're not using it. It's not like, and I worry that as they move into like new versions of the TV, they're going to stop supporting the app so that when we get iOS 7, something breaks. Oh, we're not supporting that app anymore.
And that's, I think that's probably valid. You know, just like, you know, who was it? What did they just stop? Oh, I don't know. The maps. That's right. Sorry. Moving on from AV Network, avnetwork.com, talking about a new projection technology. This is from David Keane. And he's writing, basically, he calls it a quote-unquote controversy. I'm not going to call it that. But the fact that The Hobbit was shot in a non-standard frames per second technology, you know, non-standard, and the fact that it was also done in 3D, which we'll get to in a second. Bill, is this? I mean, Peter Jackson is a well-known, you know, filmmaker. Is he kind of develop, you know, trying to push this kind of like James Cameron was trying to push 3D with Avatar?
Right. Well, actually, interesting. Cameron's shooting his next movie in the same frame rate. So like this, the Avatar sequels, he's planning on shooting these. I actually have a dog in this fight because one of the things I do is video production.
Okay.
And one of the things that if you are an amateur or, you know, trying to break in and make your own videos, one of the things that is absolutely nutty is if you're shooting with a DSLR or a prosumer camcorder, which almost everybody is, you're shooting digital. And digital shoots at a higher frame rate. Now, the problem with a higher frame rate is you get a better crisper picture, but it doesn't look like film. And because they use it for like soap operas and stuff, people have it in their head that it's cheaper. So shooting on video is cheap, shooting on film is expensive. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of the confusion for people comes in, because they're going in expecting, okay, I'm going to see this $200 million movie. Oh, this doesn't have the soft focus that that a film has.
Well, aren't there filters for that? I'm being totally serious, but somewhat, you know, silly. Aren't there filters for that?
Well, there are, but again, what you're doing is you're degrading the picture so that it matches this perception of what quote unquote a film looks like. Now, I haven't seen The Hobbit. I'm planning on going to see it this weekend, and I'm going to try to see it in the high def because that's the way the director shot it, and that's the way he intended it to be seen. But the thing that I'm hearing is, I've heard two different things. I had some friends who went down to Austin to a special screening, and most of them really loved it, didn't have a problem with seeing it in the high frame rate. And then I'm hearing from some other people that it's because the picture is so sharp, the fantasy elements don't look fantastic enough. They look like sets. They look like, you know, something that was built. But I'm really fast. There was actually a really, really fascinating article about this guy who was talking about, in terms of film history, how people don't watch silent movies or black and white movies. There are people who just have blocks about that. And he was saying this is going to be the next thing, because when everybody starts shooting in these high frame rates, you are going to get a mass of the population who don't want to watch the classic, like Godfather and Star Wars and stuff like that. They're not going to, because it's not going to look right to them. Hmm. And he was worried about that from a film history perspective.
Well, that's valid.
Hey, Tim.
Yes.
Tim, I figured it out.
What?
He's the equivalent in video of an audiophile snob.
Wow.
What I heard him say is we need to keep all of our vinyl.
Yes.
We need to keep all of our VCRs.
And our cans.
Yeah, while reading the article, it seemed very interesting. I wasn't 100% sure about if all of the facts were there, but by doing the 48 frame rate, they said that was for the 3D side, which would totally make sense if you're doing a left-right, or let's say frame packing left-right, that you would do a 24 and a 24, you know, simultaneous, so that I get a full, let's say, let's just convert it to, let's say, SMPTE. I get a full 1080p 24 for each eye.
Okay.
I'm cool with that. But that wasn't clear when I was reading it if that's exactly what they were doing.
Well, it said it was shot. They were doing
48 per eye.
Yeah, it was shot 3D at 48 frames a second per eye.
Right. Well, there's two versions that are being released. My understanding is there's a 48 frames per second version in 3D, and then they're also releasing a 28 that is not 3D, but they've changed that so that it looks more like quote unquote film.
Wait a minute. Did you say 28?
I'm sorry, 24. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if he was trying to do a 29 drop frame, you know, a 30 frames a second one.
Well, what I'm saying is that they're releasing a version that also looks more like what people are used to.
Hmm.
So you're going to kind of have to hunt if you want to see the 48 frames per second 3D.
Bill, we're going to ask you this. I know Kevin's answer on this. At least I'm pretty sure I do. If you go see The Hobbit, are you going to see the 3D?
I haven't decided. I'm hot and cold on 3D. The only 3D I've seen several 3D movies, and the only one that I thought it made sense on was Coraline, because it seemed to me when they shot that, what it was trying to do was do depth, and here's like the depth of the picture rather than, oh no, here's this tennis ball that's coming out at you from the picture. So Coraline was the only picture I've seen that really. I saw Avengers in 3D just because. I was planning on seeing something else, and then I said, oh, I'm going to see Avengers. And I didn't, I honestly cannot recall a single 3D shot from Avengers.
Well, so. that leads us into our next story about glasses-free 3D. Is that something that's from commercial integrator, is that something that you see, whether it's from a film perspective or from a home theater's perspective, where that's where 3D either has to go, or is it just it's toast before it gets started?
Did it ever work? Did it ever?
I have personally seen some auto stereoscopic. You like that word? That worked. Yes.
On the
on a trade show floor, but
no, on the thing that we were talking about earlier, the little kid toy.
on the ViewMaster. Yes, on the ViewMaster. No, you it was what? it was a glasses free auto stereoscopic 3D. It was a specific application. It was for military training. It had a several different models of aircraft and other military equipment. But and there was a hot spot. There was a very limited area where you could stand and see it. But it still worked.
I went to CES 2 years ago, and Samsung had a party for journalists, and the whole thing of this was they were hyping 3D TV. And so we were standing around and looking at it, and my impression of it was, if you were sitting dead center in front of the TV and did not move, yes, you got the 3D effect, and it worked. Anybody else who was slightly off, it didn't happen. So it basically, you were selling these to people who lived alone and had a lot of money and were willing to pay a lot of extra money to get the special 3D content that had to be made specifically for this TV. I have never met, and I know people who are visual, you know, they're really into the latest technology and this and that and stuff. I have never met nor heard of anybody who actually owned a 3D TV.
Mr. Iselli, is 3D, whether it's auto stereoscopic or not.
So how do you, so Kevin, how do you feel about Red Blue 3D, the old creature from the Black Lagoon and?
Oh, that was fantastic. That was
That was classic 3D.
Yes, that was real 3D.
Let's bring that back. Let's get Samsung on the line and have them make a red-green.
I have a memory of them showing the creature from the Black Lagoon or something on network television when I was probably 10. And you had to go out and buy a special magazine that had it in there. It was showing it one time. And yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm like 90. You guys didn't know that. I'm like...
It's kind of like, it seems like 3D is it's just dying a slow death.
No, it's bad Chinese food. It keeps coming back and back and back. back.
Did you have you guys seen Looper? The movie. Ryan Johnson, Bruce Willis, and Gordon Levitt.
Will not see it in 3D, by the way.
It does not exist in 3D, and I'll tell you why.
Now they're catching on.
The guy who directed it, Ryan Johnson, is old school movie ad. You know, he's making a science fiction movie, but he loves film, does not want to do digital and stuff. But he was talking about, Martin Scorsese was talking about 3D, and of course Martin Scorsese did Hugo in 3D. Mm-hmm. And he said, Martin Scorsese compared it to what we think, like when people started first making movies, quote unquote, in color, they were like painting on the frames. So there would be like some color on the frames. But what they were actually trying to get was Technicolor. So what we think of as 3D now is not what 3D is going to become. 3D is going to become something so much far beyond what 3D is now. So he was comparing it to, you know, what Technicolor became compared to like just, you know, stuff like that. So I thought that was, but he, at the same time, so he thought, okay, so Ryan Johnson said, I see what Martin Scorsese is saying. Okay, that's going to be amazing. I'm not going to shoot in 3D.
Well, and here's the thing. A very good friend of ours, A.B. Dawn Mead, wrote a blog post some months ago where she very systematically and very well laid out the history of 3D back to the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
All right, wow. So this is not new. This is not quote unquote new technology.
Right.
That we've been trying, or the industry has been trying, for you know nigh on 80 years now to get us to experience the 3D experience, right? And every time there's an increase in resolution or increase in this and that and the other, they say, okay, now that we have higher resolution, let's try it in 3D. You know, it's like, and 3D. And the same thing will happen with 4K, and the same thing will happen with 8K and 16K whenever we get there.
Yeah, but you got to understand, Tim, there's a reason for that.
Money?
Well, survival.
Okay.
You're partly right. It's survival. When you take consumer devices and you build yourself, let's say, a small empire, and I'm not going to put out any names, but you build yourself a massive manufacturing empire, and you have to support thousands and thousands of employees, you can do that in one of two ways. Either you have expensive devices that people buy, or you have to sell just an untold amount of them at a very lower cost. And if we look at the timeline of display devices, you know, like I tell my class, it's like I remember when I was doing projects when I was still a consultant, where I put in like the first Pioneer 40-inch plasmas at $30,000 a piece,
mm-hmm.
right? And now it's like you can get a 50-inch plasma or even a 50-inch LED anytime you ordered the large, you know, the Venti Cappuccino. You know, they throw one in for you. So how do you survive? You gotta keep people, purchasing the new device. And in this case, it's exactly like you said. Hey, we have a TV. Oh, we have Trinitron. Oh, we have an XBR. Oh, we got a flat screen, and then we throw in 3D. Oh, we got LED, then we throw in 3D. Oh, we got this, and I wish they would just stop throwing in 3D, but that's just me. It is a survival type mechanism. You have to survive.
It seemed weird to me because it seems like we're still in the middle of getting everybody onto HD. I don't know what the market penetration is for how many homes have an HD TV in them, but it just seemed odd to me that like, you know, 2-3 years ago when this was still going on and HD TV was, I don't even think we'd done the changeover yet to all digital. And it was like, okay, you just bought this HD TV. Now it's time to buy a 3D TV.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's a very good point you make, Bill. And it's funny because I get asked all the time, what are you guys doing with 4K? I was like, why don't we just get the 1080p first and then let's worry about 4K? Yeah. Because, you know, when you look at the most common sources that we watch on a daily basis, we're not even looking at 1080p content.
Yeah.
What are you saying? It's not really HD.
I'm saying there is no spoon.
Ow!
Just
you're
saying.
Just mean.
Yeah.
All right. Last but not least, this is from Electronic House. If you guys, I've watched this. Actually, my sister took me onto this show. It's called Cake Boss. It's on TLC. And the guy makes cakes in Jersey, actually in Hoboken, New Jersey, and it makes good cakes. And but this article actually is about the guy, the star of the show, the main baker on the show.
The actual
Buddy.
Cake boss.
Yeah, it's the actual cake boss who inherited that title apparently from his father. So he took his house and he put Christmas lights on them, and he is automating them with a very schmancy, a very nice control system. Actually, I don't know that it says whether or not it's Crestron or AMX. So let's just assume it's Crestron.
It's not.
It's not?
No.
Does it say that?
I know what he uses.
Oh, well then never mind then.
He went the way of the dark path.
Extron?
No, sorry. I'm sorry. I have no response to that.
Anyhow, the article kind of sparked a question in me, and so I'll ask you guys. Kevin, we'll start with you. As AV guys, as guys who cover this stuff and we deal with this stuff day in and day out, what do you do and what should we do as AV guys for our holiday lights? I mean, should we go all out and say, you know, here, world, this is what I can do and this is what I do for a living? Or are you just so tired at the end of the day that you're like, eh, I'll put the tree up and that's pretty much it?
Oh, dude, I don't even have that kind of time. I don't have
you,
any.
You didn't even put the tree up yet, did you?
I did. But I'll tell you what, about 50% of the ornaments stayed in the box. Wow. Now come around during Halloween, that's different, right? It's not my holiday. I'll say that. I don't have anything against Christmas, but what I'm sorry, holiday. You can't say Christmas.
You can say Christmas.
Are you declaring war on Christmas?
It's my show. You can say Christmas.
All right, excellent. Christmas is a fantastic holiday. I just don't have the time anymore to get out the ladder and the staple gun and the 3M clasps and unrig the lights and get the other service disconnect for the whole system and the blow up Santa and the half melted reindeer. More power to the people that can do it. And some of the, when you see some of the guys that are doing, you get your Netduino out there and you start doing all your programming, and it's very cool. Don't get me wrong. Do I have time for it? No. Do I condone it? Absolutely. Go for it.
All right, Bill.
We are in the history of show offs. So start showing off.
I am a huge kid at Christmas. I love Christmas. I live in an apartment, so I can't do a lot of decorating.
There's not a whole lot you can do, kids. There.
Yeah, I can't do. Yeah, they get cranky if I hang a lit reindeer outside of the. But inside the apartment, putting up the lights just around here and putting up the Christmas tree especially. And one of the things I love, I am a sucker for like the chase lights that you can set to do like different. You can do different settings where they'll like pulse slowly or they'll flicker really brightly. So I will buy string after string of that stuff. And I think the reason I do that is because when I was a kid, my dad refused to have blinking lights on the Christmas tree. So that was unbelievable extravagance to me that once I lived on my own, I could have blinking lights.
Continue to rebel even after years.
Yeah. So is that my weird thing? I know a lot of dads didn't like blinking lights.
Here's the thing: I have two young kids. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, and even we lived in a very small house the first few years, and we recently moved, and ever since then, my daughter, I think since like September, has been after me about hanging lights, and I'm like, you know what? I'm at school and I've got this and that and the other. And so I hung the lights out and I've got the icicles and they blink and this, that, and the other. And I'm looking at, we have a show called DIY where these guys are just serious. I mean, they coordinate the music and I'm looking at their website going, I am such a slacker. So after this year, I'm going to take my icicles, half of which have burned out by now. And I'm going to recycle them and plan out. I think I'm going to start planning out in like July my extravaganza for next year. So I agree with Kevin. We are an industry of show offs and see what I can do. And I think next year I'm going to see what I can do. So
I'm pretty sure if you're waiting until July, you're way behind.
I got to talk to some of them. I got to talk to Bill and a couple other guys, George and Mr. Danforth, and say, okay, you know, what do I have to do, guys? You know, give me a list and try not to, you know, give me a second mortgage.
If you get it, you have to be careful, though, because if you start doing this stuff in July, you risk people thinking that you're the guy who never takes his Christmas lights down.
Well, that's true.
And still has the... I remember one of our neighbors had left their wreath up, and it was a real wreath. So about April, it was a little brown.
Ew.
On the side of the... Huge one on the side of the house.
It was small creatures living in it. And, all right.
Well, you know they're real.
Yeah, they start decomposing. All right, guys. Thank you very much for joining us. Bill Steitler has been here from AppleTel. He is the associate editor. Tell folks how they can find you or how they can find AppleTel and the rest of the TechnologyTel stuff.
You can find us at appletel.com, which will direct you to all of our sister sites. I am on Twitter, primarily making jokes at B, and I am at B Steitler.
At B Steitler. All right, Mr. Iselli, thank you so much. You are the senior curriculum developer for Crestron Electronics. Would you like to promote anything, sir?
Just goodwill to common man.
Goodwill toward man.
His artisanal handmade HDMI cables.
You know what? He has a Twitter. He has the coolest Twitter handle in the world, and he doesn't use it. So
I do. What is it? I have been using it.
You have been using it. It's Control Freak.
Yeah, you're not paying attention.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, see?
Although I have to say my favorite Twitter feeds right now are from the Sarcastic Rover.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. My name is Tim Albright. If you would like to follow my Twitter and my tweet, it is TD, Tim David Albright, ALBRIGHT. But more importantly for me and everybody here, please go by the website. The guys worked awfully hard on it. It's avnation.tv. avnation.tv, you'll find this show, the DIY show, education focused show called EdTech and others. We're also on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and even Google Plus.
MySpace.
Not quite yet. We have to get a band together before I will feel right going back to MySpace. So that's true. Just true that. True that. All right. Thank you so much. Next week, we're going to do a best of. Week after that, we're going to do kind of our year-end review, year-end preview. So thank you guys so much for the past year. Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Festivus for the rest of us. And thanks so much. Hapanabanaga and Hakuna Matata. So thanks very much for listening. It's all the time we have for AV Week.